Hello, angels. It is me, Willow, and I am back with the seventh part of Lois Lowry's The Giver. I don't know if it's the seventh part. I'm just saying it with confidence because every time I don't actually know. We're starting on chapter 13. We'll probably read 13 and 14 because I've been reading two chapters at a time. I really love this book, and it makes me sad every time I have to put it down. I, once again, realize now that I forgot yesterday I made an Amazon purchase and I should have gotten the other books. Anyway, if you haven't heard the original recordings of this yet, I strongly suggest that you do. They're pinned in the media channel of my Discord server. They're on my Safer Work Audio Index, which is pinned to my Reddit profile. And they're on Twitter if you scroll through all my nonsense. Should be easy to find. I actually think the audio index is super up to date right now, so you should be able to find anything you're looking for there. That has like the durations and the chapters labeled and stuff like that. I don't have much to say. I'm sitting in bed, I have my glasses on, I'm super cozy. I don't have anything to drink, but I honestly cannot be fucked getting up and getting something to drink, so. Here we go. Without further ado. Chapter 13. I threw that way too far away. Chapter 13 of Lois Lowry's The Giver. Days went by, and weeks. Jonas learned, through the memories, the names of colors. And now he began to see them all in his ordinary life, though he knew it was ordinary no longer, and would never be again. But they didn't last. There would be a glimpse of green, the landscaped lawn around the central plaza, a bush on the riverbank, the bright orange of pumpkins being tucked in from the agricultural fields behind the community center, seen in an instant. The flash of brilliant color, but gone again, returning to their flat and hueless shade. The giver told him that it would be a very long time before he had the colors to keep. "But I want them," Jonas said angrily. "It isn't fair that nothing has color." "Not fair?" The giver looked at Jonas curiously. "Explain what you mean." "Well," Jonas had to stop and think it through. "If everything's the same, there aren't any choices. I want to wake up in the morning and decide things. A blue tunic or a red one." He looked down at himself, at the colorless fabric of his clothing. "But it's all the same, always." Then he laughed a little. "I know it's not important, what you wear. It doesn't matter, but it's the choosing that's important, isn't it?" the giver asked him. Jonas nodded. "My little brother," he began, then corrected himself. "No, that's inaccurate. He's not my brother, not really. But this new child that my family takes care of, his name's Gabriel?" "Yes, I know about Gabriel." "Well, he's right about the age where he's learning so much. He grabs toys when we hold them out in front of him. My father says he's learning small muscle control. And he's really cute." The giver nodded. "But now that I can see colors, at least sometimes, I was just thinking. What if we could hold up things that were bright red or bright yellow, and he could choose instead of the sameness? He might make the wrong choices." "Oh." Jonas was silent for a minute. "Oh, I see what you mean. It wouldn't matter for a new child's toy. But later it does matter, doesn't it? We don't dare to let people make choices of their own." "Not safe?" the giver suggested. "Definitely not safe," Jonas said with certainty. "What if they were allowed to choose their own mate and choose wrong?" "Or what if," he went on, almost laughing at the absurdity of it, "they choose their own jobs?" "Frightening, isn't it?" the giver said. Jonas chuckled. "Very frightening. I can't even imagine it. We really have to protect people from wrong choices. It's safer." "Yes," Jonas agreed. "Much safer." But when the conversation turned to other things, Jonas was left, still with a feeling of frustration that he didn't understand. He found that he was often angry, now, irrationally angry at his groupmates, that they were satisfied with their lives, which had none of the vibrance his own was taking on. He was angry at himself, that he could not change that for them. He tried, without asking permission from the giver, because he feared, or knew, that it would be denied. He tried to give his new awareness to his friends. "Asher," Jonas said one morning, "look at these flowers very carefully." They were standing beside a bed of geraniums planted near the Hall of Open Records. He put his hands on Asher's shoulders and concentrated on the red of the petals, trying to hold it as long as he could, and trying at the same time to transmit the awareness of Red to his friend. "What's the matter?" Asher asked uneasily. "Is something wrong?" He moved away from Jonas's hands. It was extremely rude for one citizen to touch another outside of family units. "No, nothing. I just thought for a minute that they were wilting, and we should let the gardening crew know that they needed more watering." Jonas sighed and turned away. One evening he came home from his training, weighted with new knowledge. The giver had chosen a startling and disturbing memory that day. Under the touch of his hands, Jonas had found himself suddenly in a place that was completely alien, hot and windswept under a vast blue sky. There were tufts of sparse grass and a few bushes and rocks, and nearby he could see an area of thicker vegetation, broad, low trees outlined against the sky. He could hear noises, the sharp crack of weapons, he perceived the word guns, then shouts and the immense clashing thud of something falling, tearing branches from the trees. He heard voices calling to one another. Peering from the place where he stood hidden behind some shrubbery, he was reminded of what the giver had told him. There had been a time when flesh had different colors. Two of those men had dark brown skin. The other were light. Getting closer, he watched them hack the tusks from a motionless elephant on the ground and haul them away, spattered with blood. He felt himself overwhelmed with a new perception of the color he knew as red. Then the men were gone, speeding towards the horizon in a vehicle that spit pebbles from its whirling tires. One hit his forehead and stung him there. But the memory continued, though Jonas ached now for it to end. Now he saw another elephant emerge from the place where it had stood hidden in the trees. Very slowly it walked to the mutilated body and looked down. With its sinuous trunk, it stroked the huge corpse, then reached up, broke some leafy branches with a snap, and draped them over the mass of torn, thick flesh. Finally, it tilted its massive head, raised its trunk, and roared into the empty landscape. Jonas had never heard such a sound. It was a sound of rage and grief, and it seemed to never end. He would still hear it when he opened his eyes and lay anguished on the bed where he received the memories. It continued to roar into his consciousness as he pedaled slowly home. "Lily," he asked that evening when his sister took her comfort object, the stuffed elephant, from the shelf. "Did you know that there once really were elephants? Live ones?" She glanced down at the ragged comfort object and grinned. "Right," she said skeptically. "Sure, Jonas." Jonas went and sat beside them while his father untied Lily's hair ribbons and combed her hair. He placed one hand on each of her shoulders. With all of his being, he tried to give each of them a piece of the memory. Not of the tortured cry of the elephant, but of the being of an elephant. Of the towering, immense creature and the meticulous touch with which it had tended its friend at the end. But his father had continued to comb Lily's long hair, and Lily, impatient, had finally wiggled out from under her brother's touch. "Jonas," she said, "you're hurting me with your hand." "I apologize for hurting you, Lily," Jonas mumbled, and he took his hand away. "Accept your apology," Lily responded indifferently, stroking the lifeless elephant. "Giver?" Jonas asked once, as they prepared for the day's work. "Don't you have a spouse? Aren't you allowed to apply for one?" Though he was exempt from rules against rudeness, he was aware that this was a rude question, but the giver had encouraged all questions, not seeming to be embarrassed or offended even by the most personal. The giver chuckled. "No, there's no rule against it. And I did have a spouse. You're forgetting how old I am, Jonas. My former spouse now lives with the childless adults." Hold on, I'm trying to shift in bed without knocking a bunch of shit over. Or dropping my microphone. All right. "Oh, of course." Jonas had forgotten the giver's obvious age. When adults of the community became older, their lives became different. They were no longer needed to create family units. Jonas's own parents, when he and Lily were grown, would go to live with the childless adults. "You'll be able to apply for a spouse, Jonas, if you want to. I'll warn you, though, that it will be difficult. Your living arrangements will have to be different from those of most family units, because books are forbidden to citizens. You and I are the only ones allowed with access to the books. Jonas glanced around at the astonishing array of volumes. From time to time, now, when he could see their colors. With their hours together, his and the giver's, consumed by the conversation and by the transmission of memories, Jonas had not yet opened any of the books, but he had read the titles here and there, and he knew they all contained the knowledge of the centuries, and that one day they would belong to him. So, if I have a spouse, and maybe children, will I have to hide the books from them? The giver nodded. I wasn't permitted to share the books with my spouse, that's correct. And there are other difficulties, too. I'm sorry, I'm trying to get comfortable. You remember the rule that says the new receiver can't talk about his training? Jonas nodded. Of course he remembered. It had turned out, by far, to be the most frustrating of the rules he was required to obey. When you become the official receiver, when we're finished here, you'll be given a whole new set of rules. Those are the rules I obey. And it won't surprise you that I am forbidden to talk about my work to anyone except the new receiver. That's you, of course. So there will be a whole part of your life which you won't be able to share with the family. It's hard, Jonas. It was hard for me. You do understand, don't you? That this is my life. The memories. Jonas nodded again, but he was puzzled. Didn't life consist of the things you did each day? There wasn't anything else, really. I've seen you taking walks, he said. The giver sighed. I walk. I eat at mealtime. And when I am called by the committee of elders, I appear before them to give them counsel and advice. Do you advise them often? Jonas was a little frightened at the thought that one day he would be the one to advise the ruling body. But the giver said no. Rarely. Only when they're faced with something that they have not experienced before. Then they call upon me to use memories and advise them. But it very seldom happens. Sometimes I wish they'd ask for my wisdom more often. There are so many things I could tell them. Things I wish they would change. But they don't want change. Life here is so orderly, so predictable, so painless. That's what they've chosen. I don't know why they even need a receiver then, if they never call upon him. Jonas commented. They need me. And you, the giver said, but he didn't explain. They were reminded of that 10 years ago. What happened 10 years ago? Jonas asked. Oh, I know. You tried to train your successor and it failed. Why? Why did that remind them? The giver smiled grimly. When the new receiver failed, the memories that she had received were released. They didn't come back to me. They went. He paused and then seemed to be struggling with the concept. I don't know exactly. They went to a place where the memories once existed before the receivers were created. Someplace out there. He gestured vaguely with his arm, and then the people had access to them. Apparently, that's the way it was once. Everyone had access to memories. It was chaos, he said. They really suffered for a while. Finally, it subsided as the memories were all assimilated. But it certainly made them aware of how they need a receiver to contain all that pain and knowledge. But you have to suffer like that all the time, Jonas pointed out. The giver nodded. And you will. It's my life. It will be yours. Jonas thought about it, and about what it would be like for him, along with walking and eating. He looked around. My apologies. He looked around the walls of books. Reading. That's it? The giver shook his head. Those are simply the things that I do. My life is here. In this room? The giver shook his head. He put his hands to his own face, to his chest. No, here. In my being. Where the memories are. My instructors in science and technology have taught us about how the brain works, Jonas told him eagerly. It's full of electrical impulses. It's like a computer. If you stimulate one part of the brain with an electrode, it... He stopped talking. He could see an odd look on the giver's face. They know nothing, the giver said bitterly. Jonas was shocked. Since his first day in the annex room, they had together disregarded the rules about rudeness, and Jonas felt comfortable with that now. But this was different and far beyond rude. This was a terrible accusation. What if someone had heard? He glanced quickly at the wall speaker, terrified that the committee might be listening, as they could at any time. But, as always during their sessions together, it had been switched to off. Nothing? Jonas whispered nervously. But my instructors... The giver flicked his hand as if brushing something aside. Oh, your instructors are well trained. They know their scientific facts. Everyone is well trained for his job. It's just that without memories, it's all meaningless. They gave that burden to me, and to the previous receiver, and to the one before him. And back, and back, and back, Jonas said, knowing the phrase that always came. The giver smiled, though his smile was oddly harsh. That's right. Next it will be you. A great honor. Yes, sir. They told me that at the ceremony. The very highest honor. Some afternoons, the giver sent him away without training. Jonas knew, on days when he arrived to find the giver hunched over, rocking his body slightly back and forth, his face pale, that he would be sent away. Go, the giver would tell him tensely. I'm in pain today. Come back tomorrow. On those days, worried and disappointed, Jonas would walk alone beside the river. The paths were empty of people except for the few delivery crews and landscape workers here and there. Small children were all at the childcare center after school, and the older ones busy with volunteer hours or training. By himself, he tested his own developing memory. He watched the landscape for glimpses of green that he knew were embedded in the shrubbery. When it came flickering into his consciousness, he focused upon it, keeping it there, darkening it, and holding it with his vision as long as possible until his head hurt and he let it fade away. He stared at the flat, colorless sky, bringing blue from it, and remembered sunshine until finally, for an instant, he could feel warmth. He stood at the foot of the bridge and spanned that river, the bridge that citizens were allowed to cross only on official business. Jonas had crossed it on school trips, visiting the outlying communities, and he had known that the land beyond the bridge was much the same, flat and well-ordered, with fields for agriculture. The other communities he had seen on visits were essentially the same as his own. The only differences were slightly altered styles of dwelling, slightly different schedules, and the schools. He wondered what lay in the far distance where he had never gone. The land didn't end beyond those nearby communities. Were there hills elsewhere? Were there vast, wind-torn areas like the place he had seen in a memory, the place where the elephant had died? Giver, he asked one afternoon following a day when he had been sent away, what causes you pain? When the giver was silent, Jonas continued, the chief elder told me at the beginning that the receiving of a memory causes terrible pain, and you described for me that the failure of the last new receiver released painful memories into the community. But I haven't suffered, giver. Not really. Jonas smiled. Oh, I remember the sunburn you gave me on that very first day, but that wasn't so terrible. What is it that makes you suffer so much? If you gave some of it to me, maybe your pain would be less. The giver nodded. Lie down, he said. It's time, I suppose. I can't shield you forever. You'll have to take it all on eventually. Let me think, he went on when Jonas was on the bed, waiting, a little fearful. All right, the giver said after a moment. I've decided that we'll start with something familiar. Let's go again to the hill and a sled. He placed his hands on Jonas's back. Okay, we're moving on to chapter 14. I'm not going to pause to take a drink, but I am going to itch my leg. So, you're all welcome for that. I have socks on, and they're itchy. Okay. Willow, what the fuck is wrong with you? Can you put your own socks back on? Okay. Chapter 14. It was much the same, this memory, though the hill seemed to be a different one, steeper, and the snow was not falling as thickly as it had before. It was colder, also, Jonas perceived, and he could see, as he sat waiting atop the hill, that the snow beneath the sled was not as thick and soft as it had been before, but hard and coated with bluish ice. The sled moved forward, and Jonas grinned with delight, looking forward to the breathtaking slide down through the invigorating air. But the runners this time couldn't slide through the frozen expanse as they had on the other, snow-cushioned hill. They skittered sideways, and the sled gathered speed. Jonas pulled at the rope, trying to steer, but the steepness and speed took control from his hands, and he was no longer enjoying the feeling of freedom, but instead, terrified, and was at the mercy of the wild acceleration downward over the ice. Spinning, sideways, the sled hit a bump on the hill, and Jonas was jarred loose and thrown violently into the air. He felt his leg twist under him, and he could hear the crack of bone. his face scraped along the jagged edges of ice, and when he came, at last, to a stop, he lay shocked and still, feeling nothing at first but fear. Then, the first wave of pain. He gasped. It was as if the hatchet had laid lodged in his leg, slicing through each nerve with a hot blade. And in his agony, he perceived the word fire, and felt flames licking at the torn bone and flesh. He tried to move, and he could not. The pain grew. He screamed. There was no answer. Sobbing, he turned his head and vomited into the frozen snow. Blood dripped from his face and into the vomit. No, he cried, and the sound disappeared into the empty landscape, into the wind. Then, suddenly, he was in the annex room again, writhing on the bed, his face wet with tears. Able to move now, he rocked his own body back and forth, breathing deeply to release the remembered pain. He sat and looked down at his leg, where it lay straight on the bed, unbroken. The brutal slice of pain was gone, but his leg ached horribly, still, and his face felt raw. May I have relief of pain, please? He begged. It was always provided in his everyday life for the bruises and wounds, for a mashed finger, a stomach ache, a skinned knee from a fall from a bike. But there was always the daub of anesthetic ointment, or a pill, or, in severe instances, an injection that brought complete and instantaneous deliverance. But the giver said no and looked away. Limping, Jonas walked home, pushing his bicycle that evening. The sunburn pain had been so small in comparison and had not stayed with him, but this ache lingered. It was not unendurable, as the pain on the hill had been. Jonas tried to be brave. He remembered the chief elder had said he was brave. "Is something wrong, Jonas?" his father asked in the evening meal. "You're so quiet tonight. Aren't you feeling well? Would you like some medication?" Jonas remembered the rules. No medication for anything related to his training, and no discussion of his training. At the time, for sharing of feelings, he simply said that he felt tired, that his school lessons had been unusually demanding that day. He went to his sleeping room early, and from behind the closed door he could hear his parents and sister laughing as they gave Gabriel his evening bath. "They've never known pain," he thought. The realization made him feel desperately lonely, and he rubbed his throbbing leg. He eventually slept. Again and again he dreamed of the anguish and the isolation on the forsaken hill. The daily training continued, and now it was always including pain. The agony of the fractured leg began to seem no more than a mild discomfort as the giver led Jonas firmly, little by little, into deep and terrible suffering of the past. Each time, in his kindness, the giver ended the afternoon with a colorful memory of pleasure, a brisk sail on a blue-green lake, a meadow dotted with yellow wildflowers, an orange sunset behind mountains. It was not enough to assuage the pain. Oh, that's not how that word's pronounced. That Jonas was beginning to know now. Why? Jonas asked him after he received a torturous memory in which he had been neglected and unfed. The hunger had caused excruciating spasms in his empty, distended stomach. He lay on the bed aching. Why do you and I have to hold these memories? It gives us wisdom, the giver replied. Without wisdom, I could not fulfill my function of advising the committee of elders when they call upon me. But what wisdom do you get from hunger? Jonas groaned. His stomach still hurt, though the memory had ended. Some years ago, the giver told him, before your birth, a lot of citizens petitioned the committee of elders. They wanted to increase the rate of births. They wanted each birth mother to be assigned 4 births instead of 3, so that the population would increase and there would be more laborers available. Jonas nodded, listening. That makes sense. The idea was that a certain family units could accommodate an additional child. Jonas nodded again. Mine could. We've had Gabriel this year, and it's fun having a third child. The committee of elders sought my advice, the giver said. It made sense to them, too, but this was a new idea, and they'd come to me for wisdom. And you used your memories? The giver said yes. And the strongest memory that came to me was hunger. It came from many generations back, centuries back. The population had gotten so big that hunger was everywhere. Excruciating hunger and starvation. It was followed by warfare. Warfare? There's a concept that Jonas did not know, but hunger was familiar to him now. Unconsciously, he rubbed his own abdomen, recalling the pain of its unfulfilled needs. So you described that to them? They don't want to hear about pain. They just seek the advice. I simply advise them against increasing the population. But you said that was before my birth. They hardly ever come to you for advice. Only when they... What was it you said? When they have a problem they've never faced before? When did it happen last? Do you remember that day the plane flew over the community? Yes, I was scared. So were they. They prepared to shoot it down, but they sought my advice and I told them to wait. How did you know? How did you know that the pilot was lost? I didn't. I used my wisdom. From the memories, I knew that there had been times in the past, terrible times, when people had destroyed others in haste, in fear, and had brought about their own destruction. Jonas realized something. That means, he said slowly, that you have memories of destruction, and you have to give them to me too, because I have to get the wisdom. The giver nodded. But it will hurt, Jonas said. It wasn't a question. It will hurt terribly, the giver agreed. But why can't everyone have the memories? I think it would seem a little easier if the memories were shared. You and I wouldn't have to bear so much by ourselves if everybody took part. The giver sighed. You're right. But then everybody would be burdened and pained. They don't want that. And the real reason the receiver is so vital to them and so honored. They selected me, and you, to lift that burden from themselves. Why did they decide that? Jonas asked angrily. It wasn't fair. Let's change it. How do you suggest we do that? I've never been able to think of a way, and I'm supposed to be the one with all of the wisdom. But there are two of us now, Jonas said eagerly. Together we can think of something. The giver watched him with a wry smile. Why can't we apply for a change of the rules? Jonas suggested. The giver laughed. Then Jonas, too, chuckled reluctantly. The decision was made long before my time or yours, the giver said, and before the previous receiver, and he waited. Back and back and back, Jonas repeated the familiar phrase. Sometimes it had seemed humorous to him. Sometimes it had seemed meaningful and important. Now it was ominous. It meant, he knew, that nothing could be changed. The new child, Gabriel, was growing and successfully passed the tests of maturity that the nurturers gave each month. He could sit alone now, could reach for and grasp small play objects, and he had 6 teeth. During the daytime hours, Father reported he was cheerful and seemed of normal intelligence, but he remained fretful at night, whimpering often, needing frequent attention. After all this extra time I've put in with him, Father said one evening after Gabriel had been bathed and was lying, for a moment, hugging his hippo placidly in the small crib that had replaced the basket. I hope they're not going to decide to release him. Maybe it would be for the best, Mother suggested. I know you don't mind getting up with him at night, but the lack of sleep is awfully hard for me. If they release Gabriel, can we get another new child as a visitor? Asked Lily. She was kneeling beside the crib, making funny faces at the little one who was smiling back at her. Jonas's mother rolled her eyes in dismay. No, Father had said, smiling. He ruffled Lily's hair. It's very rare, anyway, that a new child's status is uncertain as Gabriel's, and probably won't happen again, for a long time. Anyway, he sighed, they won't make the decision for a while. Right now, we're all preparing for a release we'll probably have to make very soon. There's a birth mother who's expecting twin males next month. Oh dear, Mother said, shaking her head. If they're identical, I hope you're not assigned. I am. I'm next on the list. I'll have to select one to be nurtured and one to be released. It's usually not hard, though. Usually it's just a matter of birth weight. We release the smaller of the two. Jonas, listening, thought suddenly about the bridge and how standing there he had wondered what lay elsewhere. Was there someone there waiting who would receive the tiny released twin? Would it grow up elsewhere, not knowing ever that in this community lived a being who looked exactly like them? For a moment, he felt a tiny fluttering hope that he knew was quite foolish. He hoped that it would be Larissa waiting. Larissa, the old woman he had bathed. He remembered her sparkling eyes, her soft voice, her low chuckle. Fiona had told him recently that Larissa had been released at a wonderful ceremony. But he knew that the old were not given children to raise. Larissa's life elsewhere would be quiet and serene, as befit the old. She would not welcome the responsibility of nurturing a new child who needed feeding and care, and would likely cry at night. "Mother? Father?" he said, the idea coming to him unexpectedly. "Why don't we put Gabriel's crib in my room tonight? I know how to feed him and comfort him, and it would let you two get some sleep." Father looked doubtful. "You sleep so soundly, Jonas. What if his restfulness doesn't wake you?" It was Lily who answered that. "If no one goes to tend to Gabriel," she pointed out, "he gets very loud. He'd wake all of us if Jonas slept through it." Father laughed. "You're right, Lily Billy. All right, Jonas, let's try it, just for tonight. I'll take the night off, and we'll let Mother get some sleep, too." Gabriel slept soundly for the earliest part of the night. Jonas, in his bed, lay awake for a while. From time to time, he raised himself on one elbow, looking over at the crib. The new child was on his stomach, arms relaxed beside his head. His eyes were closed, and his breathing regular and undisturbed. Finally, Jonas slept too. Then, as the middle hours of night approached, the sound of Gabe's restlessness woke Jonas. The new child was turning under his cover, flailing his arms and beginning to whimper. Jonas rose and went to him. Gently, he patted Gabriel's back. Sometimes that was all it took to lull him back to sleep, but the new child still squirmed fretfully under his hand. Still patting rhythmically, Jonas began to remember the wonderful sail that the giver had given him not long before. A bright, breezy day and a clear turquoise lake. And above him, the white sail of a boat billowing as he moved along the brisk wind. He was not aware of giving the memory, but suddenly he realized it was becoming dimmer, that it was sliding through his hand into the being of the new child. Gabriel became quiet. Startled, Jonas pulled back what was left of the memory with a burst of will. He removed his hand from the little back and stood quietly beside the crib. To himself, he called the memory of the sail forward again. It was still there, but the sky was less blue, the gentle motion of the boat slower, and the water of the lake more murky and clouded. He kept it for a while, soothing his own nervousness at what had occurred, and then let it go and returned to his bed. Once more towards dawn, the new child woke and cried again. Again, Jonas went to him. This time, he quite deliberately placed his hand firmly on Gabriel's back and released the rest of the most calming day on the lake. Again, Gabriel slept. By now, Jonas lay awake, thinking. He no longer had any more than a wisp of the memory, and he felt a small lack where it had been. He could ask the giver for another sail, he knew. A sail perhaps on ocean next time, for Jonas had a memory of ocean now, and he knew what it was. He knew that there were sailboats there, too, and memories yet to be acquired. He wondered, though, if he should confess to the giver that he had given the memory away. He was not yet qualified to be a giver himself, nor had Gabriel been selected to be a receiver. That he had this power frightened him. He decided not to tell. And that's it. That's chapter 14. Those are some long chapters, which I'm not upset about. We're getting close to the end of the book. We're on page 149, and the last page is 225. So I think we'll be done in a couple more readings, which is sad. Let's see, I think chapter 23 is the final one. Yeah, and we're on 15, so we've got 8 more chapters. But that's all, angels. I love you very, very much. Have a wonderful day. Get some sleep and be kind to each other, including yourselves. See ya!